Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Carol Harnett. I am the president for the Council for Disability Awareness, and the name of our show is the Financial Health and Income Network. The Council for Disability Awareness is doing a campaign right now helping employers who are planning for annual enrollment of benefits for their employees in 2019 to give them material to think about, consider, and help direct, motivate, and shape their planning this year. And today's topic is one that's become particularly important, I would say, over the last decade or more, and the topic is something that's called supplemental benefits. And I'm really pleased today to have our guest, Phil Broom, who is the Vice President for Group Life and Disability Products at MetLife. MetLife is a founding sponsor of the Council for Disability Awareness, and we are so pleased and thankful for their support, and particularly pleased to have Phil here today. Welcome, Phil.
Hello, Carol. Hello, everyone. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Well, without wasting any time, let's get into this topic of supplemental benefits. And let's just start with something really basic for people who might not be clear. What are supplemental benefits?
Yeah, thanks, Carol. And actually, as I think about it, and we do hear the term supplemental benefits everywhere, and first I'd like to introduce the concept of just either complementary benefits, thinking of these as complementary benefits to a core benefit program. Sometimes when we think about supplemental, that's something on top of or an additive to supplement the benefits an individual has. And actually a better way, I think, we think about it is that they're highly complementary to a core benefit plan. We also think about it in sort of three categories, and these also could include core benefits. One would be those benefits that help individuals around their health, in a broad sense around health. The second might be would be those benefits that help an individual with life. Now that also could be certainly life insurance is the one that comes to mind as an example of that. So life protection, health protection, life protection. And then financial protection, financial benefits. And within those categories, there's different types of benefits that can be offered. So you think about financial protection, and a voluntary benefit that's popular, very popular actually, would be legal services. And so that can help individuals with estate planning and wills. It can also help them actually if they have a speeding ticket, as simple as that. So access to a high-quality network of attorneys, nationally certified. It's become actually a very popular benefit. Actually, worksite property and casualty is another one that can be, you could consider as financial protection. Certainly, a healthcare plan is foundational. I'd suggest that disability is another foundational benefit because it protects everything, an individual's income, and quite often that is an employer-paid benefit. And also dental usually falls in that core benefit category, but it also can be offered on a voluntary basis. So that's the way I think of it. First, think about it as a suite of benefits to offer an employer to help meet their needs that are complementary to an employer-paid program or a benefit plan. So that's how I would suggest we think about supplemental benefits. In general.
I like that, Phil. Yeah, I have not, you're the first person I've heard that called it complimentary. Doesn't mean that others haven't. It's just the first time I've heard it. And I really like it because, you know, we also, if I'm connecting this correctly, hear supplemental benefits interchanged with voluntary benefits. And I like this idea about a suite of benefits that complement the core. I think that's really important. And so since you've sort of foreshadowed this idea of core benefits and complementary benefits, why should an employer consider adding them to their employee benefits package?
But, great question. So I think the first and foremost reason is really what's happening with quite often with an employer's health care plan. So if I think of that category of health protection, certainly the health care plan is foundational. But with that rise of employer-offered medical that has a high deductible quite often, the employees can be, or their dependents, their members, could be left with significant out-of-pocket costs that they simply can't afford. So as an example, in last year's MetLife Employee Benefit Trend Study, more than half U.S. workers live paycheck to paycheck. The Federal Reserve reported that 40% of Americans could not afford an unexpected $400 cost. Well, we all know if we have a medical episode, quite often something that happens, that bill is more than $400, more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
So having a benefit such as critical illness, accident, or hospital indemnity can help fill in those gaps for those unexpected moments that tie really to health and health protection, as an example.
Thank you. I think that's a great example. And if you don't mind, I think I'm going to ask you to continue about that, because you just named some of the more popular complementary benefits that I've heard spoken of, particularly leading with the critical illness benefit. Can you help people understand what those products are actually designed to do and what they cover?
Yeah, absolutely. And they actually do, what's great about these benefits, they tend to fit for different employee populations. You know, so if you think of someone who has a lot of children, the younger population, they have some children or loved ones, you know, versus someone who might be a little bit more mature in the organization. They may have different needs, and they also may have different budgets related to their healthcare plan and what might be unexpected. So, we found that both accident, critical illness, and hospital indemnity have some of the lowest understanding scores as well. So, again, in our employee benefit trend study, just only a little bit over a third of employees said they understood how accident insurance works. Only over a quarter, 29%, said they understood how critical illness insurance works. And hospital indemnity was 26%. Understand how a hospital indemnity insurance program works. So it's not just offering the benefits, but really educating employees about where these might work and how they might fit, and they complement their health care plan. Now, this would compare to dental, where 2/3 of employees say they understand how their dental insurance works, and vision, where 62% say they understand how it works. So it is understandable. So I'll spend a little bit of time to describe some of these. And critical illness, I think that name of the benefit is fairly descriptive. So that's a benefit that would be paid in a lump sum, and depending if the employee covers both themselves or their spouse, as an example. A benefit would be paid in a lump sum for serious or full benefit cancer, and there's different definitions of cancer. That's a fairly common condition. Heart attack, stroke, also a partial benefit for cancer. That would be a partial payment, not a full payment, for a more limited cancer condition, coronary artery bypass graft, or major organ failure. So these are examples of the categories that would be payable in a lump sum. And as the term describes, it's intended for something that's very severe. 87% of claim activity are in those listed conditions that I just outlined. And the average benefit payment is $15,000. So really,
wow,
is reflective of what would be more of a severe condition. Certainly an individual with cancer or a major artery condition, organ failure as an example, is going to have a lot of costs that aren't covered under the health care plan. They may have also transportation costs. They may have other related costs. And so that's what that benefit is really structured in design to help individuals with in terms of a complementary protection. Accident insurance.
Do you mind if I just interrupt just for a second?
Sure.
I sometimes speculate that part of the reason why employees get confused about critical illness, because I agree with you, I believe it's an appropriately named benefit, particularly the way you've just described it. But I recall that when Walgreens, for example, went to a high deductible health plan for its benefit eligible employees, they went to a $5,000 deductible. And the way they phrased this to mitigate the $5,000 deductible they paid for a $5,000 critical illness benefit. And as a result, it appeared that their employees thought that benefit was meant to offset the deductible. And what you're saying is that's only true if it meets one of these critical situations.
That's correct. And, you know, another way I think about this, too, is when you have these conversations, you can even tie it to disability. So if you think about a disability benefit, certainly that's a baseline level of protection or a layer of protection. You can also see it as something that might also complement a disability policy, because certainly if anyone is impacted by these conditions as I've described them. There's over 30 conditions that are covered. I just highlighted the top conditions. You know, it essentially is intended to cover those severe conditions that where the individual probably likely, I would say very likely, would have additional expenses associated with those conditions that where their disability protection isn't enough. So it's probably a consolation or a combination of both additional costs related to that condition and then also this impact where individuals would have higher deductibles and copays and maximum out-of-pocket benefits where these conditions would highly likely trigger that maximum. Hopefully that's a way to think about that. And we actually, and I think it's a common way to position this, is actually to also position it with this concept of short-term disability, and then this is an additional benefit in those situations where a short-term disability event is more severe.
Thank you. I think that's really helpful. And I interrupted you. I know you were going to. I think you were going to speak about accident next.
Yeah. So accident has a different premium structure. It's usually more affordable, but it does help fill a gap for those unexpected events that might happen. And I can give you some examples of this in terms of where this comes up. And it's really would imply, it's for emergency room visits or medical testing and follow-up from a physician, certain fractures, medical appliances, therapy services, outpatient surgery, lacerations, ambulance, and some other critical urgent care events. About 57% of the accident claims are covered with that list of examples that I described, and the average benefit payout is $1,700. So that probably is an example where it can help fill the gap. It's an affordable level of coverage, typically how it's outlined. It's a scheduled payment that, again, can sort of take care of or address part of what might be a copay or an out-of-pocket deductible to help supplement that in these circumstances. And again, as you could imagine, folks who have children, who have kids playing in sports, as an example, where they may have this kind of torn cartilage, laceration, eye injury, or something of that nature. They can see and understand where this might be the kind of protection that could help them. So that's the accident benefit. And again, in the same way as you could probably get a sense of this, hospital indemnity pays a benefit, usually around hospitalization, both for sickness, for admission and confinement, or accident confinement, or an ICU confinement benefit. So someone, and again, the way I think about that is it's a bit more of a severe condition typically. So it's a broad coverage. It's the condition is really around hospital confinement of some form. Again, that's a situation where deductibles are going to be higher, right, in terms of the actual copays and out-of-pocket expense. And it's a way to help cover some of that cost. And 80% of the benefits are usually paid for those three confinement scenarios, and the average benefit payment is $1,500. So again, and of course the price point there would be a little bit different too, not quite as much as critical illness. But it's a good example where individuals, as they look at their own personal circumstances, what their budget is, what their own family situation is, could find one of these may work better for them than another, as an example. I would also call out a little bit, too, just on dental. Hopefully that would mm-hmm. can highlight a little bit there too, because sometimes dental is a more and more often, even though it's a core benefit, dental is quite often fairly heavily employee paid, either by the share of premium that the employee pays or the co-pays. And so we are seeing some movement towards a greater increase in the offering of a voluntary dental plan. And you know, the reality around that one is that dental plan designs, they've remained unchanged for a long time. They can be outdated. So I think it's helpful to take a look at the sort of lift the hood to make sure the plan design elements meet employee needs, and to offer a plan. And certainly we would offer a plan design review to make sure that that these benefits, as they're described or outlined, provide the most value and are modernized to meet current oral healthcare needs. And when they're a voluntary plan, it's usually helpful in the dental, when offering a dental plan, to offer two options, one that's a richer plan and one that may be a lower price point for individuals who have less oral care healthcare needs and may want a less mm-hmm. costly plan that they can afford. It's fairly logical. And then also mm-hmm. Important that it's communicated along with the enrollment strategy, the communication strategy, I think, to help employees understand the value of a dental plan is that receiving regular dental care is important not only to oral health, but it actually impacts overall health and well-being.
Well said, and I'm glad to hear that you will review plan design with employers when they're looking at dental, because I have seen in another part of my life where I write about employee benefits that some employers still have a plan design that reflects the origin of dental insurance, which is the 1960s, and have caps of $1,000, and you know, which certainly don't scale as well to 2019. So I think that's
absolutely
really important.
Yeah, in
any
dental, it's really all about
like,
those. Yeah. It's all about those details. There's no question.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that it's funny, Walgreens has been very public in some ways about their utilization. And they found with dental, and I'm curious about whether you see this, that while it's a very popular benefit, in a two-year period, 70% of their employees never used the dental benefit. And are do you seeing similar trends, or do you see higher utilization than that?
Yeah, actually, we do see higher utilization. And in our the way we look at dental, certainly, and we all know this, that the more individuals use their dental plan, it helps to just demonstrate the value of the benefit itself from an employer perspective. So that's an area that we actually look closely at too. Where we're planning into the future is to help support the regular habit of going to the dentist, preventive care. Mm-hmm. Certainly, most plans pay all or virtually all the costs for preventive dental treatment, and that can avoid other costs, you know, over time. That not
That's
just
great.
Impacted oral health, but also overall physical health and well-being.
Right. I remember the early research that came out with the connection between heart disease and dental disease. So
I
think that's something people often miss. Now, I'm looking at the clock, and we have just a little more than 11 minutes left. Is there another benefit you'd like to highlight for us? Or would you like to move on to discussing another element?
Yeah, I think that was good to just get a sense of those coverages. So feel free to fire away if you would.
This has been great, and I'm sure for employers who are listening, you know, it's both can be overwhelming, but I think it's also confirming the way that you're explaining it. I think it helps people start to figure out how do you lay out, for lack of a better term, a blueprint for what you might want to do with benefits. So when I'm thinking about this, often since supplemental benefits or complementary benefits are often employee paid fully and sometimes partially, how can an employer help their employees, their staff, learn more about these complementary and supplemental benefits and consider enrolling in them?
There's quite a bit. I think that's a great question. I think the first aspect of that is it's never too soon to start planning about the enrollment season, the annual enrollment season. So thinking about what an employer wants to accomplish in that annual enrollment season, then also thinking about what that on a multi-year strategy. So thinking about it as something over time, what are the goals to accomplish? And I think that's where it all starts. And I think it's also helpful to understand that, and we also learned this from the employee benefit trend study, that employees are confused and they're stressed by the enrollment process. Only half are confident they made the right decisions. Nearly half are stressed with the process, and over a third say they're confused. So to the degree that an employer can work with their broker partners and others to help map out a comprehensive enrollment and communication strategy, I think that's where it starts. And I think of it almost like an assessment or a survey is a good place to start. So determining where there may be gaps in terms of understanding of the benefits and the benefits that are available, then building a communication strategy that's multi-pronged, multiple touch points that address that based on the employee demographics, based on their desires, their dreams, right? Their location, all those can come into play. So a good place to start is we use the term a heat map. So mapping out a way to look at where those gaps would be and then building a plan to close those gaps. And then from there, they really step back also to look at, again, I go back to that broader comprehensive benefit strategy, key messages that are the objective to convey there. Because quite often those messages can be very complementary to these complementary benefits, if you would. So if the employer is changing their healthcare plan, complementing that with some additional communication about the availability of critical illness, accident, hospital indemnity, it's a very natural communication at that point in time. But put it in the context of what else is happening. There are communication firms that actually are very skilled at helping to tie those programs together. It may be that they're also introducing a wellness program. Again, so closely associated with some of these complementary benefits, we're hearing a lot about financial wellness and financial wellness plans. And again, depending on how the employer is approaching that, we hear about student loan debt, some other needs that employees have, very specific to employers. If there's solutions that can help address some of that, that can also be very, a complementary product or benefit message tied to something like legal solutions, financial wellness solutions, as well as auto and home purchase at the worksite. So thinking about financial wellness in that context can help as well. So it's really, I think, about the planning process and reflecting the fact that employees aren't that confident. So anything the employer can do to help give them greater confidence through effective multi-point communication strategies, I think it's going to really help employees see the value in their overall benefit package as they're approaching this annual enrollment season and really get started at the, right now, actually. It's a good time to start around
this.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, and that's a great summary, because I know some people are for and some people are against selling products like home and auto in the workplace. But if you think about it, as human beings, we think about our life as a whole. We don't think about, benefits necessarily that we get at work and benefits that we get at home. And if we can tie it all together, I think that can ease somebody when they're trying to make an overall strategy for how to protect their lives and ensure their lives. So I like how you explained that. I have a question I realized that I wanted to ask. and I don't know that we talked about this beforehand, which is I have run into some employers who will pay part of the premium for a complimentary benefit. Is that common, or is it more common for the employee to pay all of the premium?
I'd say for most of these benefits, it's more common that the employee would pay for most of that benefit, but there can be times, I think your Walgreens example is one, where if the changes that the benefit, usually tied to some change in the healthcare plan, right, or some change of that nature, although I do think there may have been some employers with the recent tax cut last year who I think had considered enhancing their benefit package in some fashion, but that's probably more the exception. But it's usually tied to some other action that the employer is taking, where this can help reinforce the message that they still want to offer. The employers always want to offer a competitive benefit package. I mean, it's a short, tight labor market, right? So that a valued benefit package, comprehensive in nature, is an important consideration for employees in both staying at an employer and also joining an employer. So so that may be part of it, too. It could be tied to an employer where there's a very, very tight labor market. They may consider enhancing their benefits to pay for a portion of the cost for some of these benefits as well.
Thank you. That's great insight. So I'm going to give you the final word. We have about 3 minutes left. And are any tips that you have in mind that we haven't talked about for employers that they should consider when adding supplemental or complementary benefits to their overall benefits package?
Well, Gina, I think I covered quite a few of them already. I think I do think it is helpful to think about it over a multi-year period. So approach this with every benefit and to highlight or emphasize every benefit every year. I think it is helpful to think about a theme for a particular year or a campaign theme to highlight aspects of their benefits. And again, I like this category, health protection, life protection, and then also overall financial wellness or financial protection. They may have different themes in a particular year, and if they can think about it over a multi-year benefit, I think it creates a better approach strategically around a benefit strategy as opposed to just tactically sort of coming at it each year in terms of what they want to do. It may be helpful to step back a little bit on that basis to think about what to emphasize, usually potentially using that concept of a heat map, kind of where the biggest gaps are and what an employer wants to accomplish in that particular year.
I love that. What a great way to summarize. And I'm looking at my own notes, and I had highlighted the multi-year strategy. For all the years that I've talked with employers about their plans, very often it's a singular strategy every year. And the idea of creating this heat map, which is another great phrase, and deciding what you're going to focus on each year is not only helpful to you as an employer in developing an overall compensation and benefit strategy, but I think it's got to be more helpful for your employees. So thank you, Phil, so much.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about 10 years. I'm suggesting even like a three-year strategy. Who can think beyond that?
In my head, I thought three. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I think 3 years is a great period of time, particularly the way you laid it out, which I also like, the idea of a theme of health protection, a theme of life protection, and a final theme on financial protection. So again, I'm going to close, and thank you so much, Phil. It's been great to have you on the show again. You've become such a great resource for not only the Council for Disability Awareness, but also for our listening audience. So thank you so much for your time and your knowledge and your expertise. And I want to say thank you as well to our listeners. If you want to look for more information, there will be a transcript of this show available at blog.disabilitycanhappen.org, as well as a link to this podcast. Thank you, Phil. We wish you the
best
for the rest of the day and the week. All right, and thanks to everyone else. Goodbye.
Okay, goodbye.